Zoran Mamdani, the new mayor-elect for New York City, will take office on January 1st of 2026. And depending on who you listen to, he is either the greatest things that has happened in New York electoral politics since 1969 in some ways, or the worst thing that could possibly happen, not just to New York City, but to America. What is the truth? What in the heck is going on? Why such a polarizing figure who hasn't even taken office yet? We're going to try to talk about some of this today because it's kind of something that's really rolling all of America, not just New York City. And there's nobody better to go to than somebody who himself was a former New York mayor candidate and currently radio satirist in New York City himself. Randy Critical, I've been on your show a few times. Glad to have you back on ours, actually, for the first time, live on the fly on PRN and WBAI in New York on Fridays, and which you'll be doing later today. So you're taking out time from your show prep, and we really appreciate it. Welcome to our show.
Well, I got to tell you something. I spent more time. I haven't even put my show together at 3 o'clock today live, because I was up all night trying to figure out what I was going to say today. So I did a lot of research and a lot of anxiety. For me, I haven't been this anxious and nervous since I did the Tonight Show 41 years ago. So that's because I have such respect for you and this show, and Gary as well, your producer, and I watch it religiously, as you know. Some of your guests, just got to get this in there, I love all your guests, but have been on my show, Andrei Martyanov and Larry Johnson. I haven't got Douglas McGregor on, but I'm a big fan of his too. And your shows are fabulous. I love the shirt man.
Yeah. This is the design by Gary. I think, Gary, aren't you wearing one of these right now?
Yeah. You got to get one. Give one to Larry Johnson, would you please?
Yeah. We did not plan this, by the way, but Larry's wearing his own version of that. These are available, by the way, if anybody wants to buy them.
Right, I'm going to get them. I'm doing my Walter Brennan look today with suspenders, all right?
I love it. It's a great look.
Of course. You remember Little Luke? All right. I'm an impressionist, too. I'm a satirist and an impressionist, all right?
Yes, you have. I know. I'm going to ask you to do one. This is, again, this is not even what we're talking about today, but I would be remiss if I didn't give my audience an opportunity. As you know, because you mentioned it on when I was on your show one time, one of my favorite movies is Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, where Jimmy Stewart is one of my favorite actors in there. Give me your Jimmy Stewart. Give me something from that movie.
Well, there's a lot of Jimmy Stewart. The Jimmy Stewart when he was young, when he, now wait a second, Harry Bailey went to war. He saved every guy on that transporter. Then he got older and did the Philadelphia story, and his voice got a little slower, and he did a TV show called Hawkins, and then he did the soup commercials when he was.
Okay, It's a Wonderful Life.
It's a Wonderful Life is the best, yes. Come on, Potter, you know, I built those homes. I can't remember, yes. You, It's a Wonderful Life. I thought the other one, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington, was your favorite.
Oh, it is, but it depends on what time of the year. We're almost at Christmas, so that's kind of moved up in front right now.
All right. A lot of people, Mr. Smith Goes to Washington. Come on, Clarence. Where's Mary? Come on, you're not going to like it, George. All right, yes.
That's really good, man.
Back then. You didn't hear my Gregory Peck. All right, never mind.
Next time, we'll get into that. All yeah, right. We might do one show just on Reagan. Your impressions. That was pretty good.
For you. I got to start off doing Reagan. As you know, this is a very controversial time. And this Zoran, whatever, he couldn't say his name, but he'd remember it at some point. At any rate.
Very good. Yeah. And very appropriate. And that's actually what we're going to talk about. And you were the first one I thought of when all this stuff with Mamdani started breaking and so much interest is made. And he just had this blowout victory and everybody's just going crazy afterwards. And the fact that you have been in a lot of New York politics and you've run for a lot of offices. I wonder if you could just kind of just set the stage here. Tell us, I think it was 2013 when you ran for New York mayor. You've also gone against a couple of other noteworthy
people. I ran against Chuck Schumer in 2010 in the Democratic primary. I didn't get there because he spent millions of dollars to get me kicked off the ballot. The Democratic primary ballot. Okay, so I didn't get there. So I was drafted by the Libertarian Party to run in the general election. But Schumer had to spend a lot of time. He was very nervous about some someone like me coming in, because, you know, Schumer was a, he embodies what's wrong with the Democratic Party, Chuck Schumer. He supported the war in Iraq. He supported the Patriot Act. He gave us Glass-Steagall, the repeal of Glass-Steagall. So Schumer was a, you know, he was everything that's wrong with the Democratic Party as it is today. As Doug McGregor's always talking about, it's a uniparty. Democratic Party in New York is so corrupt. And I ran in 2013 for mayor. I did okay. You know, I beat a couple of other candidates. And it was really performance art for me. I wanted to, you know, raise some issues. Ran for governor in 2014 against Cuomo. And, you know, who I've known since 2002. But it was performance art, but I really wanted, look, if I thought I was going to win, I wouldn't have run, all right? Because I wouldn't want to go through what Mondotti is going through right now, all right? Because there's 56 days left, 55, 56 days before he takes office. If he takes office, a lot can happen between now and then. I mean, I'm afraid that Trump may send Jelani up here to chop off his head, you know?
Well, yeah, now that we're going to have a base in Syria, maybe he might talk to me, but we'll talk about that on another occasion. But I want to center on before we even get into this, on Cuomo, because he was a central figure in this current election here. And you were saying just before we went on air here that he also was a lot is what was wrong with New York politics, not just Democratic politics. What makes you say that?
Well, first of all, he's despised by most of the Democrats, particularly here in New York City. He's a control freak. I can say this because I'm an Italian American. He is the kind of like a Sonny Corleone personality, you know, a megalomaniac and a rageaholic and a backstabber. You know, so he really infuriated a lot of Democrats because, like I said, he was always wanted to be in the spotlight, a control freak, as I said. And so it was no surprise that he lost the Democratic primary because there's no support down here for him in New York City. The support that he got at the end, I guess, were independents, Republicans that defected from Curtis Lee was.
Yeah, well, even when President Trump himself was a big, you know, ally at the right, at the left, they just showed you they didn't care anything about it in New York. They just didn't like Mamdani, apparently.
Yeah, they just didn't like him. And, It's really sad. It was a horrible last couple of weeks. Everybody, Bloomberg, these billionaires pouring in money to try to unseat him, and the red baiting was so ridiculous. This was like Roy Cohn out of Roy Cohn's playbook. Roy Cohn and McCarthy and Hoover's playbook of him calling him a communist. I mean, Trump. You think he's ever read Das Kapital or the Communist Manifesto or anything by Lenin? He doesn't know what a communist. The guy's no communist. He's a democratic socialist, you know. And what does that mean? I mean, they're calling.
Well, and actually, before you get to that, because I'm gonna talk about something like that, but I want to show a juxtaposition of, just for those who may not see, just how polarizing the views are of him are here. First of all, here is Mark Levin from Fox News.
Yeah, put the warning sign up there, Gary.
I know. You know what's going to be following here. Right, this was actually right before the election, and he was sounding all the alarm bells. Right.
Quote, socialism doesn't mean stealing money from the rich, he wrote in 2020. It means taking money the rich stole from everyone else. In another post, taxation isn't theft. Capitalism is. He hasn't disavowed those views. When asked on CNN last month whether he liked capitalism, Mondami smiled. No, I have many critiques of capitalism, he said. If elected, Mondami plans to expand the public sector significantly, making all bus rides free, opening a city-run grocery store in every borough, and offering universal child care. Gee, what could go wrong? We don't just need more accountability. We need fewer police. That's what he tweeted in the summer of 2020 at the height of the George Floyd protests. He wasn't subtle. Quote, defund the NYPD, he wrote during a week of violent unrest across the country. A month later, he laid out a 4-point plan to begin doing just that. Freeze hiring of the cops, cancel overtime, halt equipment purchases, and slash $1 billion from the NYPD's budget over 4 years to start.
Okay, now that last one here, that's what actually does have a lot of people alarmed. Now, I think in his acceptance speech or his victory speech, he said, no, we're not going to defund the police. But he did write those things back then. What do you make of that? And what do New Yorkers think of that part?
Look, we have 40,000 policemen in this city, 40,000. It's the sixth largest army in the world. All right. So we have policemen everywhere. We have in Israel right now. They're guarding the water up in Woodstock. There's a lot of police. And you know what? There's too many police. Because we need, he's not saying defund them. It's reshift what their obligations are as the police. You know what I mean? Just take some of that budget and put it into community service police. That's what we need. We need people that go into Harlem and Jamaica, Queens, that are acquainted with the community rather than sending police in from Long Island that get the gig here, because you can be from anywhere and be a cop in this city. And there's a lot of problems with it. There's a lot of small like arrests. There's a lot of hassling of poor people, homeless people. You know, it's just reshifting what they do. What do the police do in New York City? Not necessarily to defund them. That's a bad term to use, and it shouldn't be hung on him. But he's not going to be able to do that much, to be honest with you. I mean, the city, he can't even raise taxes. You want to talk about the taxes? He can't raise taxes. Everything goes through the state. The state has control over everything that we do in terms of raising money for the city. And they'll give us the money. They do it through a 9.5% sales tax. All right. Very high. The real estate tax, very high. And you know what? It's like 20 years old, the assessment. It costs so much money to reassess the buildings in New York City. It would take 5 years to do it and cost $1 billion. So as far as the police go, I know you got Mark Levin. Levin is 11. I can't believe you foisted that on me. I can't stand that guy's voice or personality. He's such a blackguard and a reprobate. What's the other? Is there a positive side here that you have?
Yes, there is, because in light of President Trump on his Truth Social posted out that Mamdani's a communist, as you said a second ago, and he's a terrible person. He's awful for New York City, and because he's going to destroy the city, Trump may not even give him money. He's going to withhold federal funds and make it even worse for New Yorkers. And in response on NBC News, Mamdani was asked to speak for himself.
The president of the United States has had to say, he's had a lot to say about your campaign. He called you a communist. Because he's the president, I want to give you a chance to respond directly to him. How do you respond? Are you a communist?
No, I am not. And I have already had to start to get used to the fact that the president will talk about how I look, how I sound, where I'm from, who I am, ultimately because he wants to distract from what I'm fighting for. And I'm fighting for the very working people that he ran a campaign to empower that he has since then betrayed. And when we talk about my politics, you know, I call myself a democratic socialist in many ways inspired by the words of Dr. King from decades ago, who said, call it democracy or call it democratic socialism, there has to be a better distribution of wealth for all of God's children in this country.
And you know, the reason I used that one by Mark Levin before is because part of the thing that he was using to mock this guy is what caused so many people in New York, as far as I understand, that's why I'm asking you, that excited them about it. You're talking about free bus rides, frozen rent, child care for everybody. He literally mocked that. But isn't that something that attracts a lot of New York voters?
Yes. What attracts a lot of voters is to clean up the subway system. Federal funds are not coming in. You look at the subway system in this city. I take it 5 days a week. It is filthy. Larry talked about the subway system in Moscow. I was there 2 years ago. Every subway stop there looks like the Taj Mahal inside. This looks like the ones here, each stop looks like an outhouse from Gary, Indiana. Just the worst subway system. They smell, there's rats, there's food all over the place. I mean, seriously, we need that to be overhaul the subway system. And the bus, as far as the buses go, I don't agree with that, because he can't do it to begin with. He's not in control of the bus system. The MTA is. So there's no way that Mamdani can make them free to anyone unless he builds his own fleet. and he doesn't have it in the capital budget to do that. So,
Well, you know, now that's one of the questions I'm asking. I mean, he's got a lot of enthusiasm there on that victory speech. A lot of people cheering, a historic win. But now comes the hard part. It's one thing to win, but it's a much more difficult thing to govern. How much headwinds is he going to run into, and is he going to be able to produce on his promises?
I think it's going to be more of a bully pulpit for him in the beginning. And if I were him, I would go after national figures, and I'd go after the Democrats. The Democrats are not going to make it easy for him in this state. I mean, you know, the Democratic Party in this state is the worst. As McGregor says, a uniparty. Well, it couldn't be more emblematic than that of Hakeem Jeffries. Hakeem Jeffries lives in the poorest district. He represents the poorest district in New York, and yet there's no money. Doesn't talk about federal funding of the subway system or for the homelessness that cramp his streets. Subway, the amount of people that need homes, they need treatment and all that. There's a lot. It's despicable of this man. There's no money for that. You know why? Israel and Zelensky comes first for Hakeem Jeffries and the rest of the Democratic caucus in the House of Representatives. That includes Gregory Meeks, big Ukraine guy. That includes Chuck Schumer, a big Ukraine guy. They got money for that, but nothing for New York City. And that's what people, and I want to get to this because I know we don't have a lot of time. That's what people are rejecting right now. The crackdown on the students at Columbia University by Biden, the crackdown on the students at Hunter who were out there opposing the genocide in Gaza while Hakeem Jeffries and the rest of these congressmen, Democrats, were supporting it, supporting that. And that was the rejection. This is a clarion call to the Democratic Party. They better change, which I don't think they're going to do because they're too controlled by their donors.
I'm glad you brought that up. Gary, do we have that soundbite from? Okay, we're going to get it just a second. I'm going to play you something here that was actually, again, from Fox News, where Hakeem Jeffries was being interviewed in the aftermath of this. And they show him a soundbite from AOC who says, hey, you know, this was Mamdani had to fight not just the Republicans, but also the old guard in the Democratic Party, and he had to overcome them both. And she kind of gave this warning to the Democratic Party about that they had to make some changes, almost like what you said there. And then he asked him, which side are you? Are you the old guard or the new guard? Now, to my eyes, when he answers this question without saying so, he sounds like, I'm going to stay part of the old guard. See what you think.
Here's what Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez said about Mayor-elect Mamdani and his race.
He had to not just defeat a Republican. He had to defeat a Republican and the old guard of the Democratic Party at the same time. The Democratic Party cannot last much longer by denying the future, by trying to undercut our young, by trying to undercut a next generation.
Are you part of the old guard or the future that Congresswoman Ocasio-Cortez talks about her and Mayor-elect Mamdani?
In the House, as you know, we have a two-year employment contract. And every 2 years, we have to go back to the voters and make our case as to whether we are continuing to deliver for the American people, the people that we're privileged to represent, in ways that improve their quality of life. That's what Democrats are all about at this moment, House Democrats in particular.
He literally didn't answer the question and just talked about something else, which means he's the old guard. How do you view that?
He's definitely the old guard. I mean, why is he the House Minority Leader? I mean, he's not Ron Dellums, okay? He's a conservative Democrat. He was okay. He was in the Assembly in 2002 of the State Senate, and I worked with him on a couple of issues, so I know. But he switched, and so he's playing the game. He gets a lot of money from the same people that were trying to destroy Mamdani. All right, so he's going to be out. He's not going to be the next speaker. I can tell you that. Midterm elections next year, people are lining up to run against him. So he's done. Gregory Meeks is done. There's going to be a lot of new candidates coming out to get rid. You know, the wineskins, the old wineskins need new wine. All right, and that's what's going to be coming up next year. I mean, Just take a look at his record. He's despised. I mean, Mamdani won his district overwhelmingly, got a bigger percentage of the vote than he did, Jeffries. Wow. Not just Jeffries, it's Schumer, too. Schumer's going to be facing a primary. Schumer's going to be, and I don't know what his relationship is going to be with Governor Hochul, because she controls the purse strings in this city, and she needs him. So it's a quid pro quo. She got on early. Jeffries, I don't know if Schumer ever showed up at all in support.
No, he didn't. In fact, that's what I was going to ask you. What does that tell you about the Democratic Party when none, and I mean none, of the major Democratic figures got behind him even after he won the primary, and yet he has this overwhelming victory? What does that say about the Democratic Party, not just in New York, but in the U.S. right now?
I think you're going to see a revolution in the Democratic Party. Are they going to go by the way of the Whigs? Okay, seriously, you can't keep this up. They need some new faces in there. Are like, you know, he's a two-term. People say, I got to get this in because I know you're short on time and you'll like this. You know, he's a two or three-term assemblyman. How could he do anything? You know, what does he know? Well, there was a two-term assemblyman in 1800 by the name of Aaron Burr, all right, in the New York State Assembly, two terms, all right? And what did he do? He organized the Republican Democratic Party in New York City, and they threw out the Federalists. That was their swung the state and the election to Jefferson in 1800. That's what Aaron Burr did, all right, as a two-term assemblyman. So, you know, if you look at that as a precedent, maybe Mamdani will do well between now and the next year. I don't know, but it has been done in this city. But that old Tammany Hall that Burr set up is still in effect. You got the Democratic clubs in this city that run this city, that did up until this last one, because they didn't give any support. There's like 100 clubs here. Tammany Hall, like connected clubs, although Tammany Hall's gone, but the clubs are still here. They weren't out there for Mamdani. So I think they're going to be rejected, and they're not going to be influential in the future. I mean, that's, I know we're talking about arcane things here, but I just want you to know that the Democratic Party is really dead in the water right now.
And so now that, so that's a battle they're going to have to face internally. But then on the other side, you have the Republicans that are just as seen by Levin, as seen by President Trump. I think now they come out and saying all these negative things about him because they're saying, oh, he's going to destroy New York. But my read of this is, like yours, is that they're afraid of him because they see that he's almost like a left version of Trump, and that he's breaking the molds, and that he's going against the whole system that had been in place, which is exactly what Trump did in 2016. And I think that they're afraid, oh, snap, he might get a lot of other people interested and others may follow after this. How do you see it?
Well, I totally agree. I echo everything that you just said. But I will add to this that they're going to throw everything they can at him. The Democratic Party, the Hillary Clinton wing of the Democratic Party, are going to throw everything they possibly can, and because they don't want to represent what he represents, which is change, you know, being more working class friendly, and support programs that help the poor. They don't want to do that. They just want wars. All right, they want endless wars. They're going to support the war in Venezuela, probably, unless, you know what, maybe Trump will send that armada down there, now Eisenhower, into the Hudson River and set up shop there to go after Mamdani, you know, come January 1st. It's a crisis. And as I said, they are at 1854. The Whig Party faded out after 14 years. That's what the Democratic Party is if they don't make any changes.
Now, let me ask you this. So that was the big watershed moments. We only got about 5 minutes left here, but I really would like your view here on the next big decision point that's coming up, and it's right away here. We're actually on top of it, and that is this government shutdown, because that is another big R versus D ram kind of headbutt here. Nobody wants to give in, and the people – not just of New York, but of the whole country are suffering right now because of this. Where is this going to go? And how does this election play into that?
I don't know how much longer this is going to play out. I've been watching your screeds on this shutdown and how they're blaming one another. It's gridlock. I don't know who wins. You got people. Look, I'm by Prospect Park and, you know, in Brooklyn, a nice area here. And you got homeless people down the street. I mean, a lot. I've never seen as many homeless people as I do now. All right. A lot of people are out of work. People, if they can't get their food stamps, this is going to boil over. There's going to be a lot of people on the streets. They got to do something soon. I don't know if they had to do the CR or what. But Johnson really is in control because he's the House Speaker. They could do something right away. He could just call him in and appoint that woman or seat that woman from Arizona as a new, he's afraid of that congresswoman from Arizona, and do something. They could be doing something right now. Where this city is crumbling, all right? This city is smoldering, and it's going to turn into a fire soon because we're the ones most directly affected by this government shutdown. We got 12 million people in this city, or 11, whatever it is, and a lot of them are hurting. You know, this is that the tale of two cities, that Dickens tale of two cities. New York City is the most pronounced version of that Dickens novel.
And in terms of the people, and you, as somebody who works on the radio and has for a long time in New York, you kind of have a pretty good pulse on what the people think as opposed to anything that's official out there. My sense from down here in Washington, D.C., is that most people don't give a crap about the Republican or Democratic parties per se, other than the real stalwart supporters of each.
Right.
They just want the government to do its basic functions so that they can live their life and not have to worry about their failures literally impacting on their lives. So they just want it over with. They almost don't care who wins and who loses. They just want the government to function. How do you see it?
Well, first of all, Trump doesn't care. He's got plenty of money. So you got people like that. As far as I see it, it's a disgrace what's happening in D.C. right now. They got to get this thing done. Unfortunately, we're going to have a $2 trillion added to the $37, $38 trillion budget. It's going to be $40 trillion. The economy, let's be honest, the economy is ready to collapse. The dollar is ready to collapse. You're going to have some real problems. And we didn't get to talk about that. But, you know, you've been warned by Colonel McGregor about how bad the economic system is. You come to New York City, you'll see it. It's going to get worse and worse. This is going to be, there are going to be people selling apples if there are any apples available in the next year on the streets because it's bad. I mean, this city, just all you have to do, I know you went to the theater district, but I don't know where else you went. You go outside of, Times Square and you'll see, even in Times Square, you'll see a lot of problems in the city. And this, the shutdown is not helping, but it will only be a band-aid. But, you know, people need it. Air traffic controllers. I mean, you got to pay them. We got JFK here, the busiest airport in the country, you know, most significant international airport in the country.
Correct me if I'm wrong, but as of today, that's been shut down by 10%, along with 39 other airports around the country, as a direct result of the problems with the shutdown. How's that affecting anything, or is it too early to tell?
I don't know. I don't fly as often as I take the train now, as slow as Amtrak is, but I do take the train. I don't both the subway and Amtrak, but I suppose I wouldn't be going out there if I were to visit my relatives in California. I would not go out there.
Thanksgiving's coming up right around the corner. So there's a big friction point heading right in front of all of us. So
one other thing I wanted to, as far as the immigration thing, dumping on immigrants, I'm the grandson of Italian immigrants in this country. So I have a lot of love for immigrants and people, throwing crap on immigration and immigrants is really despicable. You know, my grandparents, my Uncle Tony, great Uncle Tony, used to sell ice there in the East Village. You know what I mean? When he came here in 1910. Immigration, stop dumping on immigrants. They're the hardest working people in the country. They're not taking our jobs, as Jimmy Tingle once said. They're not taking our jobs. They're doing our jobs.
Yeah, I agree with you. There's a place for immigration reform. There's a place to do it right. There's a place for national security and border control. And there is a place for immigrants. And we are richer because of it.
There's no place for ICE agents to be taking people off the streets that are selling fruit. woman, women that clean toilets in my building at WBAI, and grabbing them, and you know, it's all about the numbers. It's all about the numbers. They get as many people as they can, and they get the overtime and all of that. But they're not getting any drug traffickers. They're not getting any real criminals when they do these raids. You know what I mean? And you can't wear masks. That's what they did in Argentina in the 1970s. They wore masks. Why are these people wearing masks? Seriously. They shouldn't
be
wearing
masks.
I have a problem with that. Ku Klux Klan wears masks, all right? Hiding what they do. Why are these guys wearing masks? Seriously. Yeah. Not
I hear you. I hear you. I'd rather have it just out in the open because we're supposed to be an open society.
It'd be nice. Hey, I need to see your papers, sir. And just throw them into a van. I mean, that's what they do in Ukraine right now. They take people off the streets and put them
on. Oh, yeah, that's a bad analogy. Well, listen, Randy, we really appreciate you coming on today and providing these observations, because ultimately, I think, at least I'm pretty sure for you and I personally, we care about the people of any country or any city in the United States, and far less about the elites up on the top that want to throw rocks and mud back and forth at each other at our expense. And I'm really getting sick of seeing that. So I hope that this is a wake-up call that both Republicans and Democrats make sure that they focus a little bit more on the people they allegedly serve, so maybe things can get a little bit better. That's the hope anyway.
Well, let me close with the words of Ronald Reagan, who once said, "God bless America, the greatest nation in the land."
Well, I'd love to see that come back. All right. Thank you very much. We appreciate it. And by the way, you were mentioning something about the economics and how the problems that could be coming. Well, it turns out that here in about 10 minutes or so, we've got another show on with talking about the financial collapse could sink Great Britain's support for Ukraine. People keep hearing about we'll support Ukraine for as long as it takes and all this kind of open-ended things. Well, it turns out there are some real limitations to that, and they could be coming sooner than you think. Tune in about 10 minutes for Alistair MacLeod from the UK, giving his financial expertise on why there is more trouble than just what's happening on the battlefield. Thanks very much, folks, and we'll see you then on the Daniel Davis Deep Dive.